Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. If you have a car question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Always a popular show. Call Gordon now or else you might not get through. You can also email voxpop at wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. The one and the only Gordon Fricke, and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, beginning over in Germany, don't you know? And if you have a question for Gordon Fricke, call now. It gets very, very crowded. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you may email your question to voxpop at wamc.org. Voxpop at WAMC.org or 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Thank you, Ray. Good to be back. How are you?
Oh, you know, we're hanging in there. And last night I got up about 3 o'clock in the morning and stayed up for half an hour. And I got to thinking about horsepower. What a vague term. Give me a little bit of history of how this came about and how you actually quantify it these days, because engines are still X number of horsepower. It's got to mean something concrete.
Yeah. It's a very strange origin, and it really does go back to a horse.
Right.
Back when horses were doing all kinds of work for farmers and industry, they needed a way to take a measurement. Say, all right, what are we accomplishing here? How are we going to measure this? So, I don't know how they came up with these numbers, but they took a horse, and they had a rope and a pulley, and that horse was then walking forward, lifting a 550-pound weight. And when that horse pulled that weight 1 foot in 1 second, that was called 1 horsepower.
Huh.
And then you can mathematically bring it up to, and I had another conversion is 3,300 foot-pounds per minute, which is 550 foot-pounds per second. So you can multiply it out or whatever. But so it's kind of an archaic way of making a measurement, but they needed to assign something to the amount of work that they were accomplishing.
And it's still
and
used.
And if you want to take... If you want to take it into automotive terms, is what is kind of why we're here today.
Right.
The original type of a measurement was called SAE, which is a Society of Automotive Engineers.
Right.
And they had a gross horsepower rating, and that was used up until about 1972. And what they basically did is they said, okay, here's the engine out of the car on a test stand. We're going to measure its horsepower at the crankshaft. And what they did is they stripped all of the accessories off of the engine. So no alternator, no power steering, no air conditioning unit, no air cleaner. And I think they often took off the manifolds and put what were called long tube headers. It was just a bunch of individual pipes put together.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave the engine kind of maximum power, which was a little unrealistic because when the engine was back in the car, all that stuff was back on it. So the SAE gross horsepower numbers were higher than what they then called SAE net.
Okay.
And the net is as if the engine was in the vehicle with all the stuff on it, exhaust system, alternator, power steering pump, air cleaner, everything. So the numbers went down. So everybody liked to quote SAE gross horsepower because they were a lot higher. My muscle car has 400 horsepower. Well, if it went to SAE net, now you can bring it down to like 3.25 or something like that. But anyway, that was kind of a long-winded answer, but I hope it answered your question.
It did. It did. And I wrote down the question so I'd remember it while you were answering, and it worked. This email from John in Delaware. Can you go deeper on top-tier gas? I've been doing some reading, and on one forum, a guy who says he was a tanker driver who delivered gas swears that the additives are introduced at the terminal and that all the gas stations on the route get the same stuff. You've indicated that the different brands use different amounts of additives in their gas, and I just saw where you can order top-tier stickers for your pumps as if it's just a come-on. Can I buy the cheaper gas and just use one of those injector valve cleaners in between oil changes? And that's from John in Delaware.
Yeah, now that's a valid question because the tanker driver is correct. The gasoline shows up at the terminal because the gasoline comes from a refinery.
Yeah.
So the refinery is taking crude oil out of the ground and then it refines it in a tower, and all of the different levels of fuels come out when they refine it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the really high-end stuff at the top is gaseous, and then, then there's gasoline, and there's kerosene, and diesel fuel, and heating oil, and, motor lubricating oils, all the way down the bottom. So let's say a company like Shell, who is a top-tier gasoline company. They buy the gasoline and they have their own custom tailored additive package. And
okay.
They add detergents and cleaners and emulsifiers and all kinds of stuff that modifies that raw gasoline into their tailored brand and level on the pump.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, there is definitely a difference. If you buy the absolute cheapest gas you can buy,
yeah,
and run a high-quality additive in it, you're definitely going to help it along. But if you're going to do that, you need the additive in every single tank you run through the car.
Ah.
And that could get more expensive than if you were to purchase the top-tier gas to begin with. And then if you're not careful, you're going to dilute your oil with additives. So I wouldn't do that.
So interesting. You know, and is that the same as premium? I mean, is that what we're talking about? Can the octane be at 87 and still be top tier gas?
So yeah, the top tier is not the actual octane number.
Okay.
It's the amount of additives, cleaners, and stuff that enhances the gasoline. The octane's another level to the fuel, and that's to resist detonation or pre-ignition in engines with higher compression.
Okay, Gordon.
So it's a different animal.
Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's Cars, 800-348-2551. That's the number. Henry writes in, I have a 2015 Chevrolet Cruze. When I turn the heat on and I set the dial to the front windshield and the back windshield, after about 20 minutes of driving and having the heat on, I start to smell a hot burning smell. From recollection, the odor sometimes smells like melting plastic, sometimes smells like burning gas. Recently, the occurrences smell more like burning gas. Am I overusing the heat setting, or is this an issue related to the car's functionality? Is the solution something that requires a mechanic's attention, or can I address this myself on a Saturday afternoon? That's from Henry.
Yeah. So, no, he's not overusing it because the dials are made to go, at max.
Yeah.
You know, if let's say you were in way up in Canada, you're going to have those things set high all winter.
Yep.
Pretty much. So as to the odors, there's a few things that can make the air coming out of your heating system smell. Characteristically, a sweet odor like maple syrup and steam that doesn't seem to want to go away, or your windows have a terrible time defrosting on the inside, can indicate a heater core leaking antifreeze. That's not good.
Okay.
That'd be the worst news. Other odors come from the cabin air filter getting plugged and full of rotting debris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the little air filter that's usually behind your glove compartment that filters the incoming air before it hits your ventilation and heating system.
Yep.
And we change those on a very regular basis. And Don in my shop can attest to what we pull out of those heater housings. In fact, we had one this morning in a Subaru that looked like a rodent condo. It was all fluffy.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, it's all like they made a little room in there.
Oh, no.
So that's another source of odor. And the other one, you know, could be something got on the fan resistor, if the car still has one, which that cruise might.
Yep.
And that goes back to the debris that could be coming through the cabin filter. So anyway, the cabin filter, the owner, that's pretty easy. He can do that himself. I would check that first.
Okay, last email for now, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. This one's from Ed in Delmar. Are hitches an automatic red light? There's a picture. Is this a former bike rack hitch? And I believe Ed is looking maybe at buying a used car and wonders if the hitch, if you see a hitch, should you be concerned if you're a used car buyer?
You know, that's funny you say that. I had a parts delivery guy decades ago who was a former salesman, and he worked his career in car dealerships. He used to work at what was once called Bumstead Chevrolet in Troy.
I remember that. Sure.
Do you really?
I remember the ads.
Right on, it's not on Hoosick Street, it's on the other side, but it was a steep area of Troy there going up the hill.
Yep.
Below motor vehicle. Anyway, his name was Mac, and I once got a used car in. It was in the shop. I was checking the car out and stuff, and it was on the lift, and he pointed to that hitch, and he said, "You getting ready to sell this car?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Get rid of that hitch." And he said, "People are going to think the car was overworked and abused by towing things that were too heavy." So there is a somewhat of a pause on a vehicle with a hitch on it, but trucks and bigger sport utilities often come with factory hitches.
Yeah.
And sometimes people never use them, or they tow very light landscape, home and garden trailers, or they plug a bike rack in it. But how do you know?
I guess you don't know. Would the transmission be the primary concern if you know the thing was used a lot?
Well, yeah, kind of. The transmission will bear the brunt of it, because if you're pulling too much, too heavy, and especially in the middle of the burning hot summer, which is when most people pull their camper trailers around,
yeah,
can be tough on the automatic transmission. Yes.
Okay. Let's take a break here. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Your phone calls are coming up next. Pete Levin, way down yonder here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. Yep, it's Gordon Fricke Day here, and the lines are loaded, so let's go right to the phones. We'll start out with Patrick in LaGrangeville. Patrick, you're on.
Hello. I'm a 2007 Chrysler Town and Country, so the first one is probably a no-brainer, but what are the chances of my boneheaded mistake of smashing my rear, you know, the tailgate window? How hard of a fix is that for an individual? And then secondarily, air conditioning, I was able to jump to, you know, it's got a leak and I can't figure out where it is. So I was able to jump the relay and get it to take a little fluid, and then it leaked out pretty quickly.
Okay.
So that's my quick question.
All right. Yeah. So the rear windshield of a 07 Town and Country an easy fix or not for amateurs, Gordon?
No, it's not really, because they are bonded or glued in with a urethane adhesive. It's like what comes out of a caulking gun, but it's once it's hardened, it's incredible. So it has to be cut out with a tool.
Okay.
And then the surrounding gets kind of cleaned and prepped, and a new glass gets bonded back in. So it's a big job.
Okay. So the second part of this is he has some air conditioning leak issues and was able to do that little trick where you can fool it into taking in some Freon or whatever it is these days.
Right.
And
yeah.
How would you pinpoint a possible pinpoint leak?
It's hard to do without test equipment. You could get a backyard charging kit in an auto parts store,
yeah.
You know, where there's cans of R134A refrigerant.
Right.
And you can add refrigerant to the system with the supplied hardware. There's a little turn faucet and a coupler.
Yep.
And if the leak is substantial, you might be able to hear it, you know, like a tire leaking.
Oh.
If it's not substantial, what you can do at home is you can spray the condenser and all the connectors and hoses and lines that you can see with a soap water solution. And it will bubble up where the leak is if the leak is enough to create bubbles. If it's a tiny, tiny leak, it's hard to find where it's coming from without leak detection equipment.
And the leak detection means you're pressurizing it, and then how do you find it?
Yeah. Well, what we do is we'll put the system on a vacuum, and if the vacuum decays very, very quickly, you got a substantial leak. So then you add some refrigerant, and you check for leaks. You listen, you look, and then you... you can spray that soapy solution all over the place, and you can also use an electronic leak detector, which sniffs out the leaking gas. Mm. But it's all stuff you really can't do in the backyard other
yeah.
than the home kit, add some refrigerant, and spray it.
All right. Hey, Patrick, thanks for the call. Now to Moreau and Reed. You're on.
Can you hear me okay,
yep.
Ray?
Go ahead. You're on.
Okay. Hey, tire pressure. I'm getting the correct tire pressure. There's the side on the door, the pressure on the door. I talked to the guy that sold me the tires. I talked to Subaru. Both Subaru and the tire guy, because we live here in up north, they want me to run 3 to 5 pounds higher on pressure from 30 to 35 and 34 on my Subaru, 2015 Subaru. And I don't carry that much. I mean, me in the car and stuff, but not that much weight being drawn. So what's the story?
Yeah, no, those guys are giving you pretty good advice.
Okay.
The tire pressure to go by is the sticker that the manufacturer put on the door pillar or the door of the car. The number that's on the tire sidewall is the maximum pressure you can put in that tire. And that comes from the manufacturer of the tire. So you'll see on your door jamb, let's just say 32 PSI, and then people say, well, that's, I don't know, I'm going to go by what the tire says. Well, a tire might say 51. That's max load, max pressure. So what we do, what I do, is you take the door jamb value, and I usually add 2 to 3 pounds to that number.
Huh.
And the reason for that is the tire will roll a little easier. It will tend to allow the tire to generate a little bit less heat, especially in the summer on hot roads. You tend to get a little better tire life out of that slightly higher pressure. You're only talking 2 or 3 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that never check their tires, which is pretty easy to do. I mean, where do you check your tires today, right? If you put them at, let's say your door says 32 and you put them at 32, 2 months later, they're going to be down to 30 or 29 anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to lose air regardless. All tires leak.
Okay. Reed.
So that's good okay. advice.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Gordon Fricke Day. Cars today on Vox Pop. We'll go to Beckett. Phil, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm calling in reference to a 2008 Jeep Grand Cherokee. I acquired this about a year and a half ago, and I had two issues that I brought to my local Jeep dealership late last summer. The first was the liftgate latch would not release. I had tried a shooting of the WD-40 and so forth, probably didn't get it in the right spot. So on that issue, they did pretty much the same thing, only they got the solution in the right place and it released the latch. However, they did recommend that I replace the tailgate latch and handle for a cost of $910.
Mm.
The second issue was in relation to the valet keys, the fobs. And I discovered that the valet keys had not been cut. So I brought this issue to the dealership, and they said that both of the fobs were aftermarket, and I would have to I'd have to order a new fob from them, and they would program it and cut the key for $480 a piece.
Okay.
Now I said, okay, let's just forget about the latch. It's working. If it stops working, I'll come back to you. As far as the fob goes, I said, all right, I'll do one of them. And about 2 weeks later, I hadn't heard from him, called back. Well, I guess we forgot to order it.
Okay.
So now at that point, they said, well, yeah, we'll order it for you. Who's going to pay for it? I said, well, I am. So, okay, it'll take 4 to 5 days to get in. I have yet to hear from them.
Right.
My question is, I know that was pretty long-winded, but
yes.
My question is, how can I get this fob situation resolved without the dealership being involved?
Well,
yes.
I went to the hardware store for mine, but that's just me.
What was that, Ray? Was that the Le Mans, or was that your modern-day car?
No, for the Caddy, and they had to program it and everything, but, it was about, I don't know, $40, $50 bucks, maybe? It wasn't too bad.
Yeah. So the answer is yes, and there are good locksmiths out there now that do automotive, and they can get you a fob, they can program it, and they can also cut a key. So you don't have to go to the dealer, especially on a vehicle of that vintage. If it was a 2025 Jaguar, that would be a different story.
Yeah.
Locksmith shops. There's in the Capital District, there's a handful of them. There's even guys that come to your home and do it. So that's totally attainable. The first thing was that latch. So, I wouldn't be replacing that latch either. Now that it's working, that proves that it can work, and it's just going to need to be periodically socked with some penetrating oil. WD-40 was a brand you mentioned earlier, you just need to get it. And WD-40 is harmless for the most part, so even if you dribble it all over the place and it runs out, it's not going to really harm the vehicle. You want to open up the tailgate, and with one of those long, those good nozzles, just hammer it in there from time to time. And if it has a mechanical latch, not a touchpad, you want to shoot it in everything that moves on the latch also. Just keep the tailgate lubed up and reach out to a locksmith that does automotive.
All right, Phil, thanks for the call. It's Gordon Fricke Day today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll go to Elizabeth in Albany. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hey, thanks. I'm driving a 2021 Forester. It's overdue for an oil change according to the usual criteria of like 5,000 miles or 6 months. My oil change was last done July. And so it was due in January, but I'm 2,000 miles shy of the 6,000 miles. How long can I go safely? I'm at 16,300 as I drive it today.
So you're doing your oil changes at 5,000-mile intervals, is that what you were saying?
I believe that's the Subaru recommendation.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, and that's actually, that's pretty good. It's pretty accurate in today's world for the most part. I was a believer of 3,000 miles 3 months for years and decades, and then the oils got way better, the filters got better, and the engines got better. So I'm okay with 5,000 miles, but you're only at 3,000. Did you say you're 2,000 away from that mark?
Yeah, I'm 2,000 away from the from that criteria. I'm not going to be driving apparently enough. It gets highway and local.
Yeah.
So I don't know what can I go by mileage? Can I wait until I'm at 18,000? Or is it?
So you've gone through the winter with it. It was last July that you had it serviced. Because you drive fairly low mileage, is your driving bad? Is it a lot of around town idling, warm it up a lot in the wintertime, that kind of stuff?
Mixed, but probably on that side of it. Yeah, probably 60, yeah. 70-30, highways 30.
Yeah.
I do both.
Yeah, it wouldn't be out of line to do it at 4,000. You know, you could wait till the 5. If that car, the nice thing about your car is you still have a dipstick, so somebody can pull that dipstick out and look at the oil. It'd be nice to have somebody take the dipstick out and put that oil on a white piece of paper and just see how horrible it looks. If it's really in, you know, very, very dark and black and doesn't look great, just change it. It's the cheapest insurance you can provide your engine is changing the oil, and by all means doing it 1,000 miles sooner is actually a good thing.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. 800-348-2551 the number, and voxpop@wamc.org is the email. Mike in Saratoga writes in, hello, I have a 2017 VW Golf all-track wagon. Lately, when I start up the car, there's a knocking that is somewhere behind the glove compartment. It lasts 5 to 10 seconds, then it goes away. Happens every time I start the car for about the last week or so. And that's from Mike in Saratoga Springs.
I think probably what he's referring to, and we can't ask him any questions,
no,
obviously, but it could be a motorized air door actuator for the heating and ventilation system.
Ah.
You know, when you turn the dial, you're sending a request for something to turn.
Yeah.
And the computer then will say, okay, looks like they want defrost, so we're going to turn the flaps and put all the air to the windshield. So it sends a signal to a little motor which has little gears in it, which opens the flaps. It's not uncommon for those things to get stuck or fail, and then they go click, 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 click,
uh-huh,
click, and they time out. So if the time is identical every time he starts the car, that clicking sound, probably got an air door actuator that has failed. That'd be my guess, what's happening there.
All right, one more email, then we'll take a break. 800-348-2551, the number. This one's from Bob. Subject heading, 2024 Tucson wiper arm loosens. This is the second time this has happened, says Bob. The wiper arm is loose, overrides on the other wiper. I tightened it about a month or so ago, and it's loose again. I have an appointment this Friday, as it's still under warranty. What do you think? And that's from Bob.
Yeah. That's a common event when we get cold, icy winters where the wipers can get frozen to the windshield.
Yeah.
Turn them on. They were still left on from the day before, and it strips that little aluminum part of the wiper arm. And they're made to do that. It's like a breakaway feature, so it doesn't destroy everything. Sometimes you can put them in the right position and tighten them back up, and they're great. Other times you got to take the wiper arm off of the post and clean out all the junk that's in those splines of those wiper posts. And if it didn't carve out too much of the wiper arm, you can just retorque them, and now they're going to bite in again and get some nice new, the splines are going to dig into that aluminum wiper arm all over again.
Okay.
So that's, and I don't know if that's going to be a warrantyable issue or not, because the dealership might say, well, geez, it looks like the, you know, the wiper was obstructed and they were turned on. I don't know.
Ah,
but,
okay.
But I've done tons of them, and sometimes you got to take the arm off and clean all that aluminum out of those splines.
What the spline is the word?
Spline, S-P-L-I-N-E. Almost like a spine, but there's an L in there. They're just straight, you know, like the threaded bolt, but the threads are totally straight. They're not turning.
Spline. I got to remember that. All right, let's take a break.
Spline.
I'm going to use that somehow in a sentence. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gordon Fricke, Cars Today. Little Zappa, little underwriting. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551 or voxpop at WAMC.org. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. It's cars and trucks and I guess small engine repair too. What the heck? Let's go to Vincent in Pauling. Vincent, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
I've got a 24 Maverick with the 2-liter EcoBoost, the cute little turbo in it.
Cool.
I keep it in eco mode, which means, I'd like to use less gas. And I notice even on a hill, an uphill, it'll upshift, which is pretty unique, I think. But sometimes I feel it lugging. Do you think there's any anything I should be concerned about, or should I trust the smarts of the computer to keep me out of trouble?
Well, for the most part, yes, you can trust it because there's parameters built into all of those shift points. But you're right, it will attempt to shift up and get the RPM of the engine as low as it can to handle the current load. And it can get confused sometimes because it's trying to optimize everything. And then the hill gets steeper, and
right,
the computer obviously didn't see that coming. And then it's sometimes they'll shift up, down, up and down, and up and down a whole bunch of times. Do you drive a similar route every day with this vehicle?
Pretty much.
I would do this: go 1 week in eco, and 1 week in when you're. You, how many modes do you have? Sport, eco, and like normal.
Oh, there's like six of them. It's crazy.
Maybe some of them aren't anything. Maybe they just are in other positions on the switch, right?
No,
I'm just
it's
joking.
It's just the light on the dashboard. That's
right. I used to say that to people with Hondas had an eco light, and you push the button and a green light comes on. They said, "What is it?" I said, "You just turned a light on. That's all. It doesn't do anything." but
it's
I would
easily fixed with black tape.
Yeah, exactly. I would experiment and do your normal routine in eco and do your normal routine in a more sporty mode. See if you
I will do that.
Any noticeable difference. It's going to be a little bit, but it may not be enough to make much difference to you. And if you think it drives better in sport or normal mode, I would do that because I don't really like the rapid upshifting and heavy duty lugging. I like to spin it up a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So I would try that. Okay. See, be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, those new Mavericks are nice. That's a really nice car.
Yeah,
it's a great idea.
I got
idea.
It at a good price. Last year it was at a good price.
Yeah, well,
the 25s have gone up some. I have another question, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Regarding the little turbo in it. I drive in eco mode mostly, which means I kind of take it easy on the engine. Is that turbo always working, or does it only work when I lean on it?
No, it's spinning all the time. The minute the engine's running,
all
it's spinning.
Okay.
Yep, and it's going to be called into action the harder you press the gas pedal down. But that's a totally integrated turbocharger. It's there all the time.
All right, Vincent, thanks a lot. So, Gordon, you're going to put the turbo in the Caddy for me?
Yeah, have you found a kit yet?
No, but I want this.
Yeah, keep searching.
All right, I'll never use it, but I want it. Let's go to Rodney and Rhinebeck. Rodney, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Gordon, I love your show, and I never called in on this. This is probably not that important, but I'm kind of curious. I've had several Subarus, generations 1 through 5. I have a 2013 Outback. The horn doesn't always want to work, and I don't really blow the horn a lot. That's why probably I didn't notice. But my friends who are mechanics, there's a big Subaru dealer here. They said, check the fuses. The fuses are fine. When I double-click the security lock, you know, lock in the car, it beeps.
Yep.
Sometimes the horn works when I blow it. Sometimes it doesn't. So I'm guessing it's in the steering column.
Yeah. Have you noticed that it works when the wheel is turned at different positions? The reason I ask is I run into this quite a bit. And if you, let's say, start the car up, let it idle, you're sitting still, push the horn button down, and keeping it pressed, start turning the wheel, and see if you get periods of times where the horn all of a sudden works, then it doesn't work, then it works with you spinning that wheel around. And it's very...
Put on the brakes or just idling or...
Yeah, not moving.
Doesn't matter.
Just so you're at a stop, but you want to turn the steering wheel with your hand on the button like you're trying to blow the horn. And it could be in the contact that's behind the airbag or on your steering wheel, but it's possible that it's in that clock spring or that spiral spring. There's a device.
I called you because I respect your expertise, and you know, you go look online, there's too much bad information.
you think?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. No, I've had intermittent horns like that, and I've had it be a horn contact, and I've also had it be the spiral spring or the clock spring that's between the steering wheel and the column.
What's the cheaper fix?
Carries all the wires.
Yeah.
The cheaper fix is the contact?
Well, yes. If it's the contact that's making the connection.
Yeah.
It is a cheaper fix. Yes.
Right.
But you got to test it and take stuff apart.
Because you need it for inspection. Eventually, I need to make sure it works when I take it to my buddy.
Yeah. I hear you.
Because I don't. You know, they have stringent rules. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hey, Rodney, before you go, you know, we just did a live show in Rhinebeck over at the Terrapin Restaurant. Did you make it over to that?
Yeah, you know, I didn't hear it, and I was supposed to go because I know all those guys, and I didn't hear from anybody. And I'm like, shoot, man, I missed those suckers, and I got to meet you, man.
Well, it was a lot of fun, and just finished editing the thing, and we're going to air it a week from Friday during this time slot.
All right, cool.
Yeah, man, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Lake Hill, New York. Judy, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm calling about a car that you helped me pick out one time, Gordon. I have a 2015 Volkswagen Golf Sport Wagon that I got in 2017 after it sat on the lot for 2 years, if you recall that issue.
Yeah.
And I was trying to decide between two different types of cars. And when I talked to you about how I love to drive and the sporty part, you suggested this choice that I was looking at.
Oh, you're going to yell at him now?
What?
You're going to yell at him now for a bad choice?
No way.
I love this car. Excellent.
I love this car. So I have 150,000 miles on it now. I do a lot of driving. I still love the car. I'm not sure I've done everything that I should have done on the car, right on time or even early. And I'm trying to decide whether I should trade it in and get something else, like the two kinds I'm looking at are like the Tiguan or the Subaru. I get about 52 miles a gallon on the highway.
Wow.
On a trip or more. And I get about 46 because I live in the country. I don't do a lot of stop and go driving, but it's fantastic on the gas. The two things I don't like is that it's a diesel and it takes about 20 minutes to warm up in the winter.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have heated seats. So that's not that comfortable. But
well,
I love the car.
Yeah. The diesels are over, as far as most auto manufacturers are concerned, still in pickup trucks and stuff, but in the U.S., diesel cars are done, and Volkswagen pretty much had the major hand in causing that to happen. So you're not going to get quite as good of fuel economy with the two cars, but yeah, heated seats are a really nice thing to have. Once you have them, you don't want to not have them. So your question is, what two cars to choose from now?
Well, I'm looking at a Tiguan, I'm looking at a Subaru, and I'm thinking about just keeping the car till it doesn't drive anymore. The only other issue I have is when I come out of a store and I'm in the parking lot, I can never find my car because it's lower than all of the other cars.
I mean, the trend has been to puff everything up
on the highway.
Sport utilities and crossovers are the trend. U.S. really got it rolling, but it's kind of reaching the whole planet now. Those are both good cars. I think you should sample each one of them in depth, drive them, and not just for a 10-minute ride, and see which car feels the best to you, because they're both good choices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Choice.
Yeah. Right. I can't just say buy this car, but I can steer you away from some vehicles that I see being bad news.
Okay.
And neither one of these are bad.
Nice job. All right, Judy, thanks a lot. And good job not getting sued there, Gordon. Brilliant and diplomatically done. Let's go to Falls Village, Connecticut. Lynn, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I'm calling. I have a 1997 Volvo automatic station wagon with about 198,000 miles on it. And I do the oil changes about every 3,000 miles. But in the last month or so, I've noticed that when I accelerate up a long hill, after I'm at the top, my car sort of surges forward, as strange as that sounds, and it will stay. Today I checked, and it stays up about 10 miles an hour faster than, you know, what my normal deceleration would be. At first I thought it might be the brake pedal, but that doesn't seem to be, I'm not having any problems with that. You could tell me differently. It's such a weird sensation. And I have to tell you, I haven't checked to see what the engine gauge is reading when it happens. So I don't know about that.
All right. Gordon.
Well, that's a kind of a vague question to... Nothing's broken. No lights are on. It's just a sensation.
Yeah, we've had our check engine lights been on for like 2 years. So
okay. Well, so the check engine light can come on for one code, and then five more codes can come on after that, and you'd never know it.
Okay, gotcha.
I would recommend, do you have a shop that you've been taking this car to regularly?
Oh, I do. I have someone who specializes in Volvos. He's very good.
Yeah, I would, I think because you're so accustomed to that check engine light, I think I would have him scan that system and just see what's in there. And there may be some evidence of other things that have ganged up on that car that could be creating that concern. The car... Even at that age, it has an electronic throttle. Could the throttle be gummed up and just need to be serviced? You know, the plate is not fully returning exactly as fast as it normally would, so you get that feeling that you're still moving. you know, there could be a few tweaks that the car could use. So I would get it scanned, see what's in that computer for codes. And then, you know, depending on where that throttle unit is located, and if I'm speaking jibber-jabber, you know, the shop will know what I'm talking about.
I totally get it. Uh-huh.
All right.
That definitely will need to be cleaned after all these years. So there could be some things that could be sharpened up on the car that might help that feeling.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. And Gordon, splendid job on the jibber-jabber. Let's go to Rick in Cohoes. Rick, you're on.
Oh, hey, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, go ahead. Got a couple of minutes.
Great, cool. I'm really glad to get through to you guys. I love this show.
Thanks.
I, too, have a 2013 Subaru Outback. This one's a four-cylinder, six-speed manual, and it's one of those unfortunate VIN series that has the bad valves. It's got this valve clattering noise going on all the time.
Yep.
So I wanted to ask Gordon, is there anything, you know, it's definitely well past the warranty period where Subaru was replacing the engines. I've got 188,000 miles on it. I'm looking to keep it for as long as I can. So is there anything I can do to help remedy this, like some mystery oil or some fuel additive or anything besides buying a crate engine?
Not really, no. I think... There was some. I think it was a piston noise that was not detrimental, but was unpleasant to the owner. And I don't think anything you pour in there is going to calm it down. What you could do, especially you got plenty of miles on it, try an oil additive that thickens the oil.
Okay.
And, you know, I got to be careful with brand names.
Yeah.
I leak out some names every now and then, hoping they'll grab me for an endorsement, right?
well, then you can't be on the show.
Yeah, right. No. But, you know, there are a lot of products out there that...
I said, will you get in trouble if I use brand names?
Well, I think Gordon can give you generic information. That'll be close enough.
If you mention a brand name, I can tell you if it's thick or thin.
Okay. Go ahead.
Marvel?
No, too thin.
Okay. All right. That's good. Thank you.
So that ruled the marvel. Okay. Yeah. Now you need something that's going to increase the viscosity and make the oil thicker and denser and heavier.
Oh.
And you'll figure that out. Right. And I would try a dose, use the recommended amount that's on the bottle. And I don't know if it's going to do much, but it may help you a little bit.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot. I mean, why don't you just buy oil that has higher viscosity?
Well, you can. You got to be careful not to go too thick, but the additive is quick and easy.
Yeah.
So I would try it.
All right. Finally, Patrick writes in, I've had experts at car shows and cruise nights insist that SAE net and wheel horsepower are the same. I always thought net was as Gordon described, engine on a test stand with the accessories, but not connected to the transmission and wheels. And that's from Patrick in North Adams.
Yeah, well, that's yet another measurement, and that's wheel horsepower. So that's even lower because the power now leaves the crankshaft, goes through the transmission, spins in the case of a conventional rear-wheel drive car,
right,
would spin a drive shaft, would then turn a differential, which turns two axles, which turns the tires on the test stand.
Amazing.
So that would indicate an even lower number because the power is being used up to go through all those other devices.
Well, listen, Gordon, we are done here, my friend, for the month, but I'll see you next month, and try not to stay too busy. Relax a little bit if you can, yeah?
Yeah, I think maybe next month we can make it live again.
All right, buddy. Well, you were live enough just from a distance.
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales, service, and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, celebrating 27 years, specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses, eye exams by appointment, IdentityEyewearAlbany.com. And Invivo Institute for Effective Communication, bringing telehealth speech therapy to listeners with a whole-person approach, helping clients make lasting changes to their lives, and VivoInstitute.org for information. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to everybody. Tomorrow, we're going to welcome original members of the band Blotto, Capital Region music favorites. They're a subject of a new documentary. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 and rock on.